Welcome to Whiskey Cask, Cask Strength Conversation, featuring news and interviews from the world of whiskey. I'm Mark Gillespie. This is episode number 323 for July 3rd, 2011. Coming up in a few minutes.
Life goes on, we're just going to get on with it, and they're still making whiskey, so, you know, there's things to look forward to.
That's Michael Fraser Milne of Whiskey Galore in Christchurch, New Zealand. His store was destroyed in last February's massive earthquake, but an all-new Whiskey Galore is almost ready to open, and the Dramfest Festival that was about to be held when the earthquake struck is on for next February. More with Michael later on, along with the calendar of events, the emails of the week, and the What I'm Tasting This Week department. First off, let's look at the news. It's brought to you by Glenmorangie. Usually, when a distillery is mothballed, it's just a first step on the road to the history books. That's what many of us were thinking when the Edrington Group decided to mothball the Tamdhu Distillery in Speyside last year. But Tamdhu is getting a new lease on life. Wednesday, Ian McLeod Distillers announced that it's bought Tamdhu from Edrington and will reopen the distillery. I talked with Ian McLeod Managing Director Leonard Russell after the announcement. While the move will help his company's blended scotches, acquiring the Tamdhu single malt is the cherry on top.
We have Glengoyne in the Southern Highlands, which is an unpeated malt, and Tamdhu will ideally fit alongside it. Really, Edrington have a great wood policy, and that's really one of the things that made me the most excited about Tamdhu. They invest heavily in wood, and I believe that the quality of the casks is a major, if not the most important, determinant of the ultimate quality of what ends up in the bottle. So Edrington have, more than a third, something a bit more like 40% of the stocks of Tamdhu are in first fill sherry casks. And there is, I don't know of any other malts that that can claim that.
One of the things that the news release did not cover was the stocks of whiskey. Did you also acquire the stocks of Tamdhu that were in the warehouses now?
Yes, that's the main part of the value of what we bought, really. The value of the stocks are considerably more than the value of the distillery itself, because we bought over 2 million litres of alcohol of maturing Tamdhu. So the warehouses are 80% full already. It's just fantastic. I'm very happy about it.
What are your plans for marketing it?
We're going to start afresh, really. Edrington understandably didn't push Tamdhu because they wanted to focus their efforts on McKellen, Highland Park, Cutty Sark, and Famous Grouse. And they also recently made a very big acquisition of Brugal Rum. So Tamdhu hasn't really been loved and cherished as much as it should have, and should have been in the past. And so what we're going to do is we're going to draw samples of all of the stocks and repackage and reposition it, which is going to take us quite a few months, but we're not in any hurry, really. We want to get it absolutely right. And the wide variety of stocks that we have mean that we've got quite a bit of sampling to do.
Now, the distillery was only really in mothballs for really less than a year. How long will it take you to get the distillery back up and running?
We could start it up very quickly if we wanted. I mean, it doesn't need any major investment at all. It's been very well maintained, and it just needs a bit of a polish, really. I think because we have ongoing arrangements to lay down malt whiskey from a wide variety of distilleries for this year, so I think that we'll probably get Tamdhu up and running early next year.
As you said earlier, that the stocks of whiskey were more important than the actual distillery, though. So will Tamdhu be operating on a regular basis in the future, or Are you going to run it as you need to?
No, no, we're going to run it full time. We're going to get it up and running and very merrily distill away. Our other distillery, Glengoyne, is running at full capacity. Well, the ideal level of distillation. We don't want to push it. But Glengoyne distills, we can distill about 1 million litres of alcohol a year at Glengoyne, whereas Tamdhu can produce 4 million. So exactly the level that we distill at going forward, I'm not sure, but it will be certainly full-time distillation. I don't think we'll do 24 hours a day because you'd need to ask our distillery manager about the most efficient way of distilling, but we will run it at a good rate.
Will you be acquiring any staff along with the distillery and the stocks? Are you taking any staff on from Edrington in this, or will you be hiring all new people to come back, or bringing back some of the people who were set aside when it was mothballed?
All of those things. Edrington are going to be very helpful and help us get it up and running again using their staff. And then we're going to recruit our own and take it over ourselves. And we'll be employing, I would think, 8 to 10 people to do the to make the whiskey there.
Now, one of the things you've done since taking over Glengoyne, and it really doesn't seem like it's only been 8 years or so since you acquired Glengoyne.
Yeah.
But one of the things you did there was really build that up as a visitor attraction, since it is so close to Glasgow. Will you be doing something similar at Tamdhu?
I don't think so, certainly not initially. Glengoyne is ideally positioned close to Glasgow. We have invested a lot of money in the visitor experience there, and I think we now get around 45,000 visitors, which is plenty. And we've put a lot of time and effort into Glengoyne. We run much more personalised tours, and the visitors can get more involved. There's a lot more whisky tasting, and it's done very well. And we've just invested a lot in the distillery shop and the whole experience, really. For Tamdhu, it's A, not so easy to find, B, there aren't nearly so many people driving past, and of course up in Speyside there are many distilleries to choose from to visit, so I can't see Tamdhu ever really having the potential to draw in as many visitors as Glengoyne does. So the answer is no, we won't have.
Okay.
I should maybe just answer no to start with. But it's not to say we never will, because it's got a train station. I mean, it is quite fabulous. It has, of course, there's no train tracks, but it has a train station right outside the door with a waiting room and a signal box, which is really very pretty, and I think we might do that up. But it's not at the front of my mind to open a visitor centre there yet.
Got to start selling some of the whiskey from there first to pay for this deal and make some money off that before you can put the visitor center in, right?
Absolutely. Well, I mean, we needed the stocks of maturing whiskey for our own blended business, because we've been growing quite well over the last few years, and we needed more maturing stocks to support our ongoing growth. But the Tamdhu single malt brand really is the cherry on the cake, and it's a large cherry. So I'm very excited about Tamdhu. I just don't know exactly how the range is going to look, but we're going to work hard on defining what the range should be, checking that the whiskey is the best that it possibly can be, and I'm hoping that it will be the best single malt from Scotland. certainly if we continue as we intend to invest heavily in sherry casks. Sherry casks cost a lot now. They're more than £600 each compared to bourbon barrels, which I think are more like £70 or £80. So it's a big investment, but it's one worth doing, and it's one that consumers are looking for. They're looking for the very best.
I have to tell you that some of the reaction I've already heard since this was announced earlier this week was has been very positive among a lot of the whiskey connoisseurs, because the people who have tried the Tam Dew single malt in the past have always considered it to be very underrated, and they're excited to be seeing this get some love now.
Well, that's great to hear. Yes, I mean, I too have been looking on the internet at what people say about Tam Dew, and it's had some extremely high scores from whiskey writers and things. And I think there's a lot we can do with it. And as you say, we really need to look at how it tastes and how it matures. So we've got a lot of sampling to do. But I'm sure that, I mean, there are people working here. Not myself, but there are people working here who are extremely talented and very enthusiastic about whiskey, and they've been celebrating even more than I have recently, because it's a great malt, and I think, as you say, I think it is underrated. I can understand that Edrington hasn't necessarily felt it necessary to push it, but we certainly are going to.
The purchase price for Tam Dew has not been disclosed, but as Leonard Russell says, most of it was for the stocks of whiskey and less for the distillery itself. Another area where the pundits may be being proven wrong: when Diageo opened the massive Rose Isle distillery in Speyside last year, there were pundits who said it would mean the end for some of Diageo's smaller distilleries in Scotland. As I reported at the time, Diageo officials had consistently said that Rose Isle would only be supplying blending stock and not replace any of the other 27 malt distilleries it owns. We got some confirmation of that this week. Diageo has submitted plans to the Moray Council for a $15 million expansion of its Dalluane distillery in Speyside, and has plans in the works for similar expansions at several other distilleries in Speyside. 17 of the 28 Diageo malt distilleries are located in Speyside. In sports, Diageo's Crown Royal Canadian Whiskey becomes the latest whiskey brand to drop its NASCAR sponsorship. Crown Royal is one of the sponsors of Roush Fenway Racing's number 17 car, driven by Matt Kenseth, but will end that deal at the end of this year. Crown Royal entered NASCAR racing as soon as spirits brands were allowed in 2005. The brand will continue to maintain the naming rights for NASCAR's Spring Sprint Cup race at Richmond. The Crown Royal move follows Jim Beam and Jack Daniels pulling out of NASCAR last year. An update now on a story I mentioned a couple of weeks ago. Stranahan's Colorado whiskey is just that, not just in name, but also now in availability. I talked with head distiller Jake Norris this week, and he explained the big reason why Stranahan's has been pulled out of other markets.
There's no way that we could have anticipated the growth. You know, we had never thought that our whiskey would do as well as it did. So when we started out, you know, we thought we could just send a case to this state, and a case to that state, and a case to Japan, and it would be okay. That would keep up. But it turned out that people want a lot more than that. And then demand in Colorado just took off exponentially. And so we said, well, if we can't even fill our orders in our backyard, what are we doing shipping to a different state? So,
yeah, how long will it be before you get back to exporting outside Colorado again?
Well, if you're looking on the Facebook page, you saw that we just received three more stills today. So we're ramping up production. And, you know, it's just going to be probably 3 years before that's, you know, before there's more Australian Colorado whiskey. But, you know, that even then, I don't know if that'll justify distribution outside. It's not, you know, it's not my call. All I do is make the whiskey. I leave that to get smarter than me.
Those new stills are being installed now, but the first spirit from them won't be available for at least 2 or 3 years. We do have a few new whiskeys to mention this time around. Highland Park has released the third and final edition of its Magnus series. The Earl Hakon is essentially a cask-strength version of the Highland Park 18, with a few tweaks. It's bottled at 54.9% ABV and follows the Earl Magnus release in 2009 and the St. Magnus release last year. I received a sample this week. I'll have tasting notes for it later on in this episode. Duncan Taylor is releasing the first special edition of its Black Bowl blended scotch. Black Bowl Special Reserve No. 1 is still a 50-50 mix of malt and grain whiskies, but this one has a higher proportion of older whiskies in the blend, including some Glenrothes from 1969 and 1978 North British grain whiskey. Just 978 bottles are available in the UK and a handful of other markets, not including the U.S. Last year, we heard from Alistair Day on his quest to recreate his great-grandfather's Tweed Ale blend. The entire first batch of the Tweed Ale blend has now sold out, and Alistair has just released batch number 2, different from the first batch, just as his great-grandfather's was. The second batch is a 12-year-old blend using older single grain, but 7 of the 8 malts are the same as the first batch. The 8th is a different mystery cask that will change the flavor slightly. It'll be available at specialty retailers in Scotland. Finally, South Korea has signed a free trade agreement with the European Union that's being seen as good news for the Scotch whiskey industry. The agreement calls for South Korea to eliminate its 20% import tariff on Scotch and other European spirits. Scotch whiskey is the largest imported spirits category in South Korea, and it's one of the Scotch industry's top 10 export markets worldwide already. The Scotch Whiskey Association says the deal will also provide legal protection for Scotch whiskey against counterfeiting. This could be a blow to American whiskey makers, though. A similar agreement between the U.S. and South Korea has been stalled in Washington, so the 20% tariff for bourbon and Tennessee whiskey imports stays in place for now. And that's the news. It's brought to you by Glenmorangie, unnecessarily well-made. Let's check the emails of the week now, brought to you this time around by Highland Park. Friday was Canada Day, and after I mentioned that on the WhiskeyCast Facebook page and wished all of our friends in Canada well, I heard from several folks north of the border. Mark Simard posted this on the Facebook page. Thanks, it's kind of you. I enjoyed it from Ottawa with a nice Canadian rye whiskey called Alberta Premium. The rye was okay, but the party was incredible with Kate and William. For the record, I've always enjoyed Alberta Premium. It's one of those whiskeys that deserves a lot more credit. And speaking of Alberta, David Stewart in Calgary also had this to say. I don't know about you, but I can see snow out my living room window. Everywhere else is green. Stampede starts next Friday. Yahoo! Kate and William will be here for that one also. If you're not familiar with it, Stampede is one of the world's biggest rodeos and a Calgary tradition every July. And by the way, the Rocky Mountains are nearby, so that's why there's some snow in the middle of July. Finally, I heard from my good friend Ed Patrick, the head of the Companions of the Quake in Canada. He and his wife Anne aren't in Canada, though. Here's what he had to say. Hi, Mark. We're on our 2011 tour of Scotland. Raised a glass in your name at Auchentoshan, Beaumore, Lefroy, Lagavulin, and Kalila, Bunahavan, Brookladdy, Ben Nevis, Aberlour, Knockdoo, Strathyla, Glenrothes, and Highland Park. Still to do, Scapa, Pulteney, Edradour, Glenturret, and Glenkinchy. Cheers, Ed. Wow, that's a long list. Thank you, Ed. I do appreciate it. By the way, Ed leads a Companions of the Quake tour of Scotland every year. One of these years, I'm going to have to tag along. I heard from Blake Johnson, meanwhile, in North Carolina. He's also doing some traveling, and here's what he had to say. Mark, I've gotten a bit behind in my whiskey cast listening due to working too hard, but I've been catching up due to some long plane flights recently. I've heard you mention Amrut Fusion a number of times and saw that it was Jim Murray's third best whiskey of 2010. However, I have not been able to find it anywhere in the States. So, I've decided to go to the source. I'm in Bangalore, India for a few weeks and have contacted the distillery. They have invited me for a tour, which I'll be taking tomorrow. The excitement begins with a 26-kilometer ride across Bangalore, which could take hours, depending on the traffic. Wish me luck. I'll send you an update after my visit. Keep up the good work, Blake. Well, I haven't heard from Blake yet. He may still be stuck in traffic. But if you find yourself in Bangalore, it's well worth contacting Amrut. This is the second time that I know of that they've opened up the doors for a WhiskeyCast listener, and I've been told it's a very friendly tour. Finally, I heard from Casey Teague of the Mac McGee Irish Pub in the Atlanta suburb of Decatur, Georgia. I was wondering if you ever made it to Atlanta. We've recently opened a whiskey bar that has over 300 whiskeys and would love for you to drop by to have a dram with us. Slantcha, Casey Teague. I don't make it down to Atlanta as often as I used to, but the next time I'm down there, I will try to stop by. Thanks for the invitation, Casey. If you have a suggestion, comment, or question, well, you can always post them on the WhiskeyCast Facebook page or just email me. My email address is comments@WhiskeyCast.com, and the emails of the week are brought to you this time around by Highland Park.
Hello, this is Jerry Tosh of Highland Park, the makers of the best spirit in the world. If you'd like to go onto the WhiskeyCast website and click on the banner, then it'll take you to the inner circle and sign up, and we'll send you as much information about Highland Park as you'd ever need to know.
Time now for the calendar of events brought to you by Laphroaig. Added a bunch of summer and fall events to the calendar this week, including a series of Wednesday night tastings each week through mid-September at the Commercial Hall in Dufton, Scotland. This week it's the Glenrothes' turn, next week Tomaten, and the following week Angus Dundee Distillers. The complete list is available at the WhiskeyCast website. Bourbon's Bistro in Louisville, Kentucky hosts a distiller's dinner with Chet Zeller of Jefferson's Reserve Bourbon on the 18th. I mentioned the Mac McGee Irish Pub in Georgia a minute ago. Their next whiskey event is a National Scotch Whiskey Day tasting on July 27th. And since we'll be talking about New Zealand in a minute, the Scotch Malt Whiskey Society's Australian chapter makes its annual trip over to New Zealand for tastings in Auckland on August 2nd, Christchurch on the 3rd, and Wellington on the 4th. There's a full list of events at the WhiskeyCast website, and it's brought to you by Laphroaig. Become a friend of Laphroaig today and claim your own square foot of Islay. This week's WhiskeyCast In Depth is brought to you by Glengarry. February 22, 2011, is a day they'll never forget in Christchurch, New Zealand. A magnitude 6.3 earthquake struck the center of the city, killing 181 people and devastating much of Christchurch. 6 months earlier, a magnitude 7.1 quake struck nearby. And just a couple of weeks ago, Christchurch was rocked by two more aftershocks. Fortunately, no one was killed in the latest earthquakes, but there was even more damage. In the last few weeks, the New Zealand government has offered to buy around 5,500 of the most badly damaged homes in what's being called the Red Zone, but local news reports indicate as many as 10,000 more homes are still in limbo. The February earthquake came just 3 days before the start of Whiskey Galore's biennial Dram Fest in Christchurch. Whiskey Galore is the leading whiskey shop in Christchurch, and the store was destroyed in the earthquake. Michael Fraser Milne is one of Whiskey Galore's owners. He's rebuilding the store in a new location, and as I mentioned last time around, plans to reopen this month. I caught up with Michael at his new store this week during a brief break in construction.
Oh, we're all fine. I mean, we're a wee bit shook up, but we're fine as such. You know, we're all our staff and families are all well. I mean, we've all had a wee bit of, you know, damage to various bits of our properties and stuff, but it's all livable. We're all managing, you know, and we've now got a new premises for the shop, which is very good to have a new focus. So the old one didn't survive very well, so we're fitting out a new one.
Let's go into that for a second. The old store was right in the middle of, I guess, what's being called the Red Zone in downtown Christchurch, right?
Oh, yes. Well, you're well informed. Yes, it is. It's sadly, we were just in that. I mean, that seems to be the worst hit area in respect of the commercial area anyway, and we just didn't fare very well there, and we had to sort of get away from there. Yeah, so the old places will soon be history, I'm afraid.
Where were you and your staff when the earthquake happened? Was anybody in the store when the earthquake happened?
Yes, there was. In fact, a couple of your fellow countrymen were in the store. They just there was three of the staff, Stephen, Lee, and David, were in the store, and two people from America who had just come up from the Antarctic program were in the store, and I just popped out with lunch, for lunch, just three shops up to a wee restaurant called Valentino's for with Alex Bruce from Adelphi Whiskies. He just arrived that morning, for Dramfest. So, so I was in there and the staff were in there. It was a pretty unpleasant experience, but fortunately, none of us were injured by some small miracle. So, it was good. It was like a set for disaster movie, actually. But it wasn't funny at the time, and it still wasn't really funny, but we got out fine, so we're thankful for that.
Sometimes you have to laugh in the face of adversity, and I know you went through a lot of it over the last 6 months or so.
Oh, yes, but, I mean, you put it all in perspective. You know, we've got our health, and we're still in business after a fashion, and in another few weeks we'll be back to it. And the people are very resilient, as people are, and, we've been fortunate. We've lost no family members or close friends, although we do know people that have, of course. Life goes on. We're just going to get on with it. And they're still making whiskey, so, there's things to look forward to. Yeah.
How much stock did you lose in the earthquake? I've heard from your colleagues that it might have been as much as 70% of your rare drams were lost.
It was overall we lost around about, I think it was 66% officially. The rare drams is quite interesting. That's the fact we did lose a few, but some of the really rare ones we managed to save because we had them in these cupboards upstairs, and Alex Bruce had just arrived from Scotland that morning, and his suitcase was upstairs, and it was a great big heavy thing with a heavy sticker on it, and he'd stuck it against one of the rare malt cabinets. And thankfully, that suitcase was heavy enough to keep one of the cabinets upright during the earthquake. So it was Alex Bruce's suitcase that saved quite a few of our good grams, but we lost about 66% overall, I think was the final end result. Yeah.
Which one of those will you miss the most?
That's a very good question. There was some very good Springbanks. We lost 66 local barley. We had a 1954 Glenfarclas family cask went, and there was a couple of interesting. We were starting to build a wee collection of sort of 1920s and 30s blends, like Cato's and different ones that from that period. There's one as far back as about 1910. Circa 1910 anyway. We lost two or three of those. And we had a 1938 Macallan, one of those Phillips and Pikes bottlings from Gordon MacPhail, which went as well. So I suppose those are the three, the Glenfarclas, the Macallan, the local barley, were some of the ones that went. And we had a 1964 Glenfiddich as well, which was smashed to bits. So, yeah, there's a few of them, but those are the significant. We lost a lot of Springbanks. They were all in one row, and they seemed to land on each other and smash. So that was unfortunate. And there was sort of some quite collectible ones in there. So we had in long rows. We had a 1974 long row, which is not quite the original bottling, but it was one of the first long rows to be bottled. It went by the board as well.
Have you been able to track down any replacements for any of these?
Yeah, we have actually. We've been purchasing at auction in Scotland, and we've got a few replacements now. We also lost interesting too. We lost some good bourbons. We had some George T. Stagg and various ones that were a little bit hard to get over here anyway. So we haven't been able to replace them yet, but we're looking for those at the moment. But yeah, we bought some odds and ends at a couple of auctions, a Bonham's auction and a McTeer's auction just recently. And we had a fortunate case of a person who wanted to sell some of their wee collection. Came and saw us about 2 weeks ago, actually. I made a few interesting whiskies there, and we've managed to. And the trade in Scotland's been very good. They've been very supportive in regards to trying to find stuff for us. So, we've had. I think the one very positive thing from a set of circumstances like this is that people have been marvellous, without exception. They've been very kind and helped us in many, very, very different ways, but. No, it's been good. That's the one thing. It's showing people in the absolute best light, you know.
You mentioned Alex Bruce from Adelphi being down there and Dramfest, and this happened literally days before your big whiskey festival in Christchurch that you guys were sponsoring Dramfest. I know there were people in Tokyo that were getting ready to leave from Whiskey Life Tokyo to fly down there and got turned around at the airport after the earthquake. What's going to be the future for Dramfest? I know you pretty much had to wipe out the entire event this year, but are you going to be able to revive it?
Well, yes. We officially postponed it, not knowing what was happening. At that point in time, we didn't know the depth of the problems we had. But we postponed it a year out, so it's going to take place in February of 2012. It'll be a different venue. We're working on that at the present time. And we've told everybody who are patient enough that the tickets, because it was a sellout, we didn't have any spare tickets whatsoever. So we told everybody, you know, that if they wanted to wait a year, basically, the tickets would still be valid. If they didn't, they could refund them. But people have been, again, very supportive. We had very few refunds. All the whiskey people who are coming from various places have all said they'll come again for February 2012. So really, you know, it was a disaster. It was that week. It has been, sort of a disappointment for us because it was our biggest Dramfest yet, and we were hoping it was the best one. But the good news is we're on track to do it again at the end of February, again after Whiskey Live Tokyo. So it'll be a different venue. It may even be in a marquee or something like that, you know, because we're a wee bit short of public space for events at the moment. But no, we'll go ahead. We think it's very important, actually, to go ahead because people have to have something to look forward to. And that's what we're going to do, and we're looking forward to it ourselves because it's a highlight for all the team at Whiskey Gold as well, you know.
How is the city recovering outside of your store? How are the rest of the folks in Christchurch recovering from this?
Well, it's a slow process, and the biggest thing is that we've had a terrible series of aftershocks, which, you know, sort of put you on edge a wee bit. But as far as business goes in the bigger picture, you know, the exporters and the business community, 95% of all business is up and running as normal, or abnormal, as people say. and so they're getting on with it. People are very much, you know, just getting on with it. They've been very resilient. The center of the city isn't, looking good. It's quite a sad state at the moment. They're taking down about 1,200 buildings to come down in the center of the city. And the eastern part of the city, where the residential sector is, has been very badly hit. Some parts have been badly hit, and there's about 5,000 homes. Around about 5,000 homes there will be sadly demolished, and some of them won't be built on those particular sites again. And there's about another 9,000 homes to be reviewed within the next sort of 6 months. The thing is, it's everything's such a, you know, big process because it's not just a matter of broken buildings. It's a matter of the land they're on. Is it safe to build on again? You know, there's this factor that nobody was aware of before, which we have called liquefaction, where this very liquid mud comes up through the ground during an earthquake and affects the ground under it. So there's a lot of factors, but the first on this street, on our new street for Whiskey Galore, for example, the first new building is going up. They've just erected the frame of it the other day, and I see the planners were across the road from us on a bare site just the other day with the surveyors and everything, and they've got the plans for that as well. So very resilient people, the Kiwis, you know, and they're pretty determined just to get on with it. And I think that's the best thing to be looking for. It's going to take a wee while, but I'd say by February next, it'll be looking more like the old Christchurch a wee bit, you know, and given a couple of years, we'll be cranking on. Yeah, just get on with it.
Now, I heard some hammering in the background. Tell me about the new store.
Well, it's quite a different store to the old one. The old one was quite wee. It was quite quaint. But we were very pushed the room, and we couldn't display all our whiskies. So the new store is quite it's a contemporary building, but it's got the advantage of having plenty of room. So it's about in effect about four times bigger than the old one. So we struggled to get 550 or 600 whiskies up on the shelf in the old store, and we had a lot of stuff, you know, under the counter and on in cupboards and stuff that we couldn't display. So this one, we won't have that problem. We'll have probably about 750 to 800 whiskies displayed. We'll have more opportunities to do tastings within the premise, so we've got plenty of room to do tastings here where we've never been able to do that. We've always had to hire a place out of Whiskey Goer. We've got a lot of back office space as well. So we've got the opportunity to, for example, bring pallets of whiskey straight through into the back office area. We'll have a lot more backup stock. And the main warehouse, which is outside of the store, won't be quite so dependent on that now. So it'll be a more streamlined business. And it'll be the same staff, it'll be the same Whiskey Goer people, and the same ethos, but just a different premise. So, to my mind, a much better premise, to be honest. People will have more room, they'll be able to browse easier, they'll be able to see the stock easier. So it's going to be a better premise. I mean, we love the old shop and wouldn't have thought of this, but I suppose, you know, it's made us think about what we're doing in the future. So we're very taken with it. It's a nice spot. It's just off the main part of town. It's a very much a commercial and shopping area. So it's good. Now we're really chuffed, actually. And everybody knows where it is. It's just up from the casino and it's just down from the Victoria Clock Tower. So it's easy to tell people where you are. So it's a very positive move for us. As it happens, yeah.
Is this a move you might have had to make anyway, even without the earthquake, just to get some more space?
Yeah, we were thinking when the lease on the old place expired, which was a wee way away, we were thinking, you know, we definitely would have to do something else because we're just too restrictive. And as we've grown and our whiskies have grown and we're, you know, what we want to do was growing. So we were, in fact, this was the street that we were looking to go to if we could find it. But at that stage, of course, there was very little options due to it being such a popular area. So it just forced things a wee bit forward. You know, it's brought us maybe 2 years ahead of where we might have been. So in some ways, and put us back in other ways. and people, I mean, honestly, folk have been very supportive. I mean, we've had the internet businesses been going along, and folk have been, you know, buying stuff from all around New Zealand and Australia and elsewhere. In fact, the distilleries, you would have known about the Spirit of Unity dram that was bottled in Scotland for the...
I was just about to ask you about that.
Well, that's one example of support. They're very kindly... because we deal with quite a few of the companies that are involved, they very kindly sent us 20 cases. We're selling that to raise funds for the, and we're giving half the funds to the, just arrived last week actually on Friday, so we're giving half the funds to the Red Cross appeal, because the Red Cross and Christchurch have handed out $54 million New Zealand dollars so far. And then there's other thing is the charity hospital. There's a charity hospital here which have been doing an absolutely superb job as well. So we're going to split the funds for that between those two outfits. And so, you know, that sort of thing that folk have been just, you know, I mean, there was no real need for, you know, there was a need for them to do it, but they didn't have to do it. It's just sort of that people have been very thoughtful, you know, the likes of Billy Walker and Ewan Mitchells and Auntie Wills and all the rest, and you know, they've just been great. So as I say, that's been the best thing about it. It's shown everybody we deal with up in the very best of light, including, you know, I suppose you say, some people that we haven't heard from before in the trade. So you know, it makes us feel quite humble, actually. Yeah.
There's a link to the Whiskey Galore website at the WhiskeyCast website, and he may have some of the final available bottles of the Spirit of Unity whiskey, since it's already been sold out in Scotland, and a small amount was also sent to Japan for sale. As soon as the dates for Dramfest 2012 are finalized, I will let you know. This week's WhiskeyCast In Depth is brought to you by Glengarry, non-chill filtered, full Highland character. By the way, this is the final week for Glengarry and Auchentoshan as the sponsors of WhiskeyCast In Depth. Please join me in thanking Morrison Beaumore for supporting WhiskeyCast for the last several months. Let's start off the What I'm Tasting This Week department with the Highland Park Earl Hakon edition I mentioned earlier. As I said, it's essentially a cask-strength version of the Highland Park 18-year-old with a few tweaks. It's bottled at 54.9% ABV. The nose has notes of fudge, ginger, lemon zest, blackberries, and a hint of linseed oil. The taste is intense and spicy with campfire smoke, ginger, vanilla, and a touch of hot fudge. The finish is long and spicy with ginger balanced with caramel and vanilla notes. I'm scoring the Highland Park Earl Hakon a 94. Staying with cask-strength whiskies for a moment, the Glenfarclas 105 is bottled at 60% ABV. The nose has notes of raisins, honey, figs, hazelnut, and oak. The taste is strong, spicy, and slightly tart. There's a cinnamon note that builds up and lasts well through the finish, but doesn't blow out the honey and fig notes underneath. The finish is long, intense, yet still very smooth. I'm scoring the Glenfarclas 105 an 89. Finally, let's look at the Weiser's Small Batch from Canada. It's bottled at 43.4% ABV. The nose is spicy with clove, sawdust, linseed oil, furniture polish, and vanilla notes. The taste has great notes of clove, cinnamon, toffee, and a nice rye base note. Great balance and mouthfeel, too. The finish is long and spicy with clove and a hint of dried apples. An excellent whiskey. I'm scoring the Weiser's Small Batch a 93. Of course, you'll find all of my tasting notes for more than 550 whiskeys in the free WhiskeyCast apps for iPhone, iPad, and Android. The Apple edition is brought to you by the Glenrothes, and the Android version is brought to you by Benromic. They're also available at the WhiskeyCast website. That's also where you'll find links to the WhiskeyCast Facebook page and my Twitter feed, WhiskeyCast HD video episodes, the calendar of events, and a complete archive of past episodes. The address is WhiskeyCast.com, and my email address is comments@WhiskeyCast.com. WhiskeyCast is a production of Cask Strength Media, copyright 2011, and comes to you from the charming, yet regrettably dry town of Haddonfield, New Jersey. I'm Mark Gillespie, reminding you that when you drink, please drink responsibly. Thanks for listening.